Peter Fitzsimons, thanks very much for joining us here at The Last Post. You and I have had the chance to interview or speak with each other before, but this time we're discussing your new book, which is a wonderment in itself, nearly as good as the Opera House itself, mate. The Opera House, out through Hatchet. What drove you to write this?
Yeah, I suppose my instinct through my writing career has always been to take on new challenges. And when I first started writing, I collected Herald works, and I could have done that forever. Then I did a rugby book on Nick Farr-Jones, and I could have done rugby books forever. Then I did political books with Kim Beazley, and notably, and I've done a lot of war books. And I suppose always when I feel comfortable in a particular genre, it's to take a hard right turn or a hard left turn and try something new, and which indeed is where journalism came from, and writing books after playing rugby. And on this one, I read in 2015, there was an article in the Paris Review about a brilliant American writer who in the 60s had written a book about the Brooklyn Bridge, which had become an American classic. And the idea was, you all know this iconic bridge, it's absolutely fantastic, but where did it come from? And I thought to myself, well, it just so happens that I live on the lower north shore of Sydney, and every day, without exception, when I'm driving, I go 3 minutes or 4 minutes out of my way to go down to the harbour, and I gaze across the waters at the Sydney Opera House. And that's why I put a researcher on it saying, see what you can find, you know, how much new ground can we break to discover stuff. He went into the archives. We called him Noel the Diary Mole, because he was brilliant at coming up with new stuff. And he came back, and we had breakfast with myself and another one of the researchers, and he started telling us stories. And I said, right, let's go. Let's start to put this together. And it's the most challenging book I think I've done, but also the one that I wanted least to let go of, because I just loved it. Loved it from the first. And I wanted to call. Are we allowed to swear on this, on your?
Yeah, go for your life, mate. I'm right behind you on that.
Okay, well, I wanted to call the book on the front cover. I wanted to call the book The Opera House, comma, where the fuck did this thing come from? You know, I mean, like, as a serious question, where the fuck did this come from? How did, and that's the question I set out to answer, how did 1950s Australia conceive the idea that we not only wanted an opera house? I mean, 1950s Australia was surrounded by a white picket fence. Everybody ate meat and three veg.
That's right.
Sundays was deeply conservative, never took a chance, never took a risk. You know, very few, some did, but, you know, as a nation, not known for artistic endeavours. We were great cricketers, and, you know, we'd done wonderfully well in the Second World War and so forth, but artistic stuff? What? And so I wanted to know how it was that 14 white fellas in the New South Wales cabinet saw a scale model of the Opera House and said, Yep, we'll build that bastard. What about that?
Right out of the blue it was, Peter. And you spoke about going 3 or 4 minutes out of your way to have a look at the Opera House. And I guess you mentioned in your book too, there's a quote from someone there about it being the temple for Sydney, a spiritual temple. And the foresight that we were just beginning to speak about there with Joe Cale and all the other politicians and architects got involved with this, it was right out of the blue. It's like a strike of lightning. It just came from where did it come from?
And look, the thing with Jørn Utzon that was fascinating, like Jørn Utzon was a young Danish architect of noted genius, but did not have a track record of building big buildings. He had a track record of winning architectural competitions. He'd won 7 international competitions. None of them had been built. And then he won this one. That's terrific. And then they said, okay, now when do you start? He was like, okay. And so that was part of the thing too, because the actual architectural engineering process to build this, you know, like, it's one thing to have come up with a vision, but the engineers then said, well, you know, what's the angle? What kind of curves do we have here? And he famously got a plastic ruler, bent it, and said, like that. And to which the answer from the engineers was, well, like that doesn't work for us. You know, we need it absolutely specific. And it's one thing for you to have, you know, in Australian manner, pulled this out of your ass, which is not what he did, of course. But that was, you know, the Australian vernacular was, it's one thing for you to have come up with this, But we need to know that it can stand, that it will be able to stand against, you know, every now and then Sydney has, you know, 100-mile-an-hour winds. It's got to be, you know, so one day there may be 120-mile-an-hour wind. We've got to be able to build something that will not fall down. And it was a very, very long process to do that. And in the end, Utzon, I cannot overstate how brilliant Utzon is.
And he was almost as stylish as the Opera House, Peter.
And a decent, very good, very generous-spirited man who was very good to his staff. But I think if you were lining up the attributes of this man, you wouldn't say managerial, the capacity to manage dozens and dozens of draftspeople and keep engineers going and to, you know, it was the same brain that could come up with something of that genius was not necessarily a brain that was managerially brilliant. And it's significant that when Utzon left in early 1966 and, you know, he resigned thinking they'll say, come back. You know, he wanted to crack the whip and say, you know, if you don't do what I say and give me the time that I need, I'll leave. And to his astonishment, they said, got the resident, taxi, please take Mr. Utzon to the airport, never to see the Opera House again. And the fascinating stuff that later on, you know, when it was built and it was so wildly acclaimed, this was really Utzon's life work. It was the culmination, the full flowering of his genius, and he did many other buildings, but this was the one. And he wanted to come back to see it, but he didn't want the hoopla of Utzon's back in town. And at one point, he considered, you know, he sent his daughter to have a look at it, and she was greeted, you know, warmly greeted. And his idea was maybe he should fly into Sydney, go to a hotel, dress as a woman, and wander all over the Opera House.
I tell you what, when you talk about things like that, you've got you've delved into you take the reader into the book and into the Opera House with your relevance and reminders of what was going on at the time, the kidnapping of Graham Thorne. And of course, you have ambition, betrayal, professional rivalry, sexual intrigue, murder, bullying, etc. If they'd turned this into a teleseries, it'd go along with The Neighbours.
Yeah, but you couldn't put it in an hour. You couldn't put it in a two-hour movie. I mean, this is Breaking Bad. This is, you know, so many twists and turns along the way. And there's sad stuff too. I mean, the Graham Thorne murder was just shocking. And it was Sydney sort of coming of age into the nasty modern world that at the time Joe Carl was the premier and he pioneered the idea of Opera House Lottery. Instead of a £10,000 first prize, we'll have £100,000. And people came from everywhere to be a part of it. Huge profits every time. And we were so innocent and naive, we said, look, okay, well, we're Australia. We don't have Lindbergh kidnappings in this place. So people won and they'd be happy to be photographed on the front page. This is who they are. Here are their beautiful children. This is where they live. And the Thorne family of Bondi won. Fantastic. And their photo was on the front page. 2 days later, they send their eight-year-old son off to school, as they always did, never to be seen again. Kidnapped, found the body, you know, with a ransom note. Found the body a month later, and the story of the forensic investigation and the policeman who didn't give up and brought the kidnapper and murderer, not that he actually intended to murder Thorne is not the thought, but, you know, it's one of the many amazing stories in it.
Indeed too, Peter. I mean, the whole thing, as we go back to 1950s Australia, that transformation, I think there was a book released recently or a couple of years ago about how people talk about the 60s, but it was actually the 50s that really laid the foundations for the change that took place in the 60s. The 50s is often overlooked, but there were a lot of people, and thank heavens there are enough people there to give strength to this idea and of the Opera House. What does it mean to Australia? We've seen it commented on about being one of the great wonders of the world architecturally. What does it mean to Australia?
Enormous significance. I mean, prior to the Opera House, our image around the world would have been the sheep. You know, Australia rides on the sheep's back. The Uluru, then known as Ayers Rock, boomerangs were beloved around the world. But there was nothing that modern Australia had created that raised a single eyebrow, let alone a gasp of admiration. And the Opera House, you know, it's our Eiffel Tower. It's our Empire State Building. And it is look at what the Australians are capable of creating. And it just highlights, I mean, my favourite quote is on the front page of the front cover of the book. And it was an American architect who said, "The sun did not know how beautiful its light was until it shone upon the Opera House." And in terms of its significance too, Greg, where are you from? You're not from New South Wales, are you, or are you?
Yeah, I'm down at Long Beach, mate, just north of Batemans Bay.
Okay, so you will remember, you and I are probably of an age, but back in the 70s, late 70s particularly, we Sydneysiders were very proud of our Hilton Hotel, because you could go to the theatre and you could go up the escalator, turn left, and you could get apple strudel and a cappuccino at 11 o'clock at night. And then something bigger and brighter came along, and it was the Regent Hotel, which opened circa 1982. And everybody went, "Look at that Regent Hotel. It's now the Four Seasons, bottom of George Street. How fantastic." And the truth of it is, it was fantastic. But 40 years later, that Regent Hotel, Four Seasons, looks like a wet Wednesday afternoon. It is so dull. It is so drab. It is so appalling. And there is the Sydney Opera House, opened 10 years prior to that, conceived 20 years prior to that, 25 years prior to that, and it looks like a sparkling Sunday morning in the year 2525. It'll never get old. And it's just this jewel that people like me, who've got no interest, no background in architecture whatsoever, no knowledge particularly, but people just look at that Opera House and just go, wow.
Yes, it's beautiful. And this, I guess we spoke before, the sense that we had overseas people coming into Australia to help this, construction workers, new ideas. So there was an opening up of the doors in many ways. We were bringing all these people from overseas to help. We had Utzon, of course, and the opening up and the willingness to bring in these ideas from overseas. It was almost like an opening of the gates.
Yeah, it was also like a perfect storm in a good way, in that, you know, one of the other reasons that Sydney got to have this thing is we had the backing. We had the multiculturalism, yes, but before that we had the Sydney Harbour Bridge. Now, so the Sydney Harbour Bridge, which was open, we've just gone through the 90th anniversary, not opened in 1932, and that had also had a long gestation period. Huge controversy, should we, shouldn't we, will it work, will it stand? And Sydney, after the war, had had the confidence, okay, let's build it. And we did build it, and it was fantastic. So right away, Sydney had, we can do great things and achieve great results. Mm. And so then the Opera House, okay, well, let's do this. We did. But then the skills to build such a thing, we did have the flowering of multicultural Australia. You know, we had Indian people working on it. We had Portuguese people. We had artisans from France. We had people from all over the world. And Utzon also took his inspiration in many part. A lot of it was Asian. A lot of it was from the Middle East. You know, he took his inspiration. A lot of it was South American, not just Danish, but he was somebody who grabbed in the best of the world of architecture, and not just contemporary, from history. And it all came together, Greg, in our Sydney Opera House.
Absolutely beautiful. Ben Long Point, and bringing in everything like that, the opening up, the
brilliant. Before you let me go, can I interrupt? I know this is your show, but not my show. But tell me, you've read it, and I'm fascinated from somebody that's read it. What did you think?
Well, it's got a seductive charm like the Opera House itself, Peter. I'm turning the pages and I'm looking at everything, and I'm bringing, you've got all these different things. This is why I talked about what was going on at the time in the 50s and the 60s in Australia. It's a seductive charm. It's like every time you go past the Opera House on the ferry, you'll take a photo and you think, how many photos I've got of the bloody Opera House? But the book itself is beautiful. It stands as one of your best. And I've read a few of yours because I get them delivered here all the time. But a seductive charm that equals the beauty of the Opera House. It's a great book, Peter. I'd recommend it as a good read for anyone out on Hachette.
Tell everyone. Thank you.
Yes. Bye-bye. Thank you, Peter. Cheers, mate.
Thanks, mate. I appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.